fueled by facts and driven by truth. Broadcasting live from beautiful British Columbia, it's Roadkill Radio. And now here are your hosts, Terry Simpson, Terry O'Neill, and Ron Gray. And we are all here tonight. Plus, in studio guest, Doris Darvishy of Real Women BC, Real Women Canada. And we have a big show tonight. That's Ron, of course, over there, Kerry Simpson there, and me, I'm Terry O'Neill. Thank you. So,
well, at least we think you are.
We think so. Yeah. So
we'll know by the end of the show, Terry.
Yeah, I might not be the way this show is going, shaping up. I might be somebody else entirely. My identity is fluid.
It's fluid.
That's fluid. Right.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
So later in the show, in the second half of the show, we will be talking with Paul and Zabeth Bain about a very disturbing, very troubling, and important child custody case. The court decision came down last week. There's been newspaper stories about this. This family has lost their entire... this couple has lost their children to the state on very flimsy grounds. And we want to talk to them, get their side of the story, and maybe get some suggestions on how we can fix the system. Kerry, you and I have been talking about this problem for 20 years now.
Yeah, I think that's what brought us together, Terry.
Yeah, that's right. And with the old BC
report, if we ever solve the problem, that does that mean we part our ways?
Yeah, I hope not, Terry.
I'm sure we'll find another one that will keep us together, Terry.
That's right. Yeah. And of course, just a bit in the first half of the show, we'll primarily be dealing with issues surrounding gender identity and sexual education and things like that.
How about just the abuse of the public education system, Terry? Let's just cut to the chase.
That's right.
The abuse.
And Ron is here as a spokesperson for Parents for Democracy in Education, and Ron actually stirred some things up in the news business here in Vancouver in the last couple of days, and his concerns were aired. Impartially, I'm sure, right, Ron? Anyway,
just partially.
So it's been a busy week getting this show together, but somewhere along the line, Kerry,
we forgot
to note and forgot to take any position on, forgot to bring any guests in today to discuss the fact that today is the 100th anniversary of International Women's Day.
Oh, I knew something was missing off my calendar.
And if it's good for anything, it's certainly good for generating column ideas in newspapers across Canada, because the newspapers such as the Globe and Mail, the National Post, the Vancouver Province, the Vancouver Sun were replete with columns about...
Replete.
I think that's
replete.
The correct word. With columns about International Women's Day.
How about obsessed?
Yeah, chock-a-block.
Yeah, chock-a-block. And I could not stop, Kerry, this morning, getting my pen out and scribbling and underlining.
Okay, good.
And
that
saying,
for your scrapbook? For your scrapbook?
Well, not necessarily for my scrapbook. I had a feeling that I would need some therapy by the
Doris,
time
this
I...
this is called therapy on Roadkill Radio.
You know, I try to just ignore those things, Terry. You know, when I flip through the newspaper over the last few days, I see those headlines, and I just don't go there. Because otherwise, you know, I start contemplating things like Valium and all those other things I'm so opposed to. But, you know, they will just bear me down eventually and just weaken me. And now you bring them into our show?
I'm sorry, but you know what? Somebody has to do it, and somebody has to bring some reality to this sort of issue here in British Columbia.
Did you bring a bottle? Did you bring a bottle
finger,
of
Mr.
wine?
O'Neill, that's abuse.
I'm not pointing at her. I'm pointing it at the world right now.
Right.
I'll just hold up my heart-shaped sticky note.
You know who must be the most miserable person in the world today? Simon Fraser University economist, who's also professor of political science and gender, sexuality, and women's studies at Simon Fraser University, Marjorie Griffin Cohen. On a day when we're marking the 100th anniversary of International Women's Day, in a country where women have more freedom, more rights, have assumed more responsibility, have more opportunity, are graduating from universities in record numbers, are winning a lion's share of the scholarships, are entering med school and law school and post-secondary education in record numbers, well above, they're hitting above their average here. Okay, they should be 51%. They're well above that in undergrad especially. Marjorie Griffin Cohen devotes an entire column in the Vancouver Sun today. Best place on earth, British Columbia. Not if you're a working woman, says Marjorie Griffin Cohen. A litany, 650 or 700 words of complaints about how horrible it is to be a woman in British Columbia.
Okay, wait, though. Does she classify moms who do the most important work in this nation?
No.
Stay-at-home moms. Are we included in this little tirade?
Let me see here. We've got women earning this much. We've got family
income averages. It'll be small.
We've got BC's economic advantage not being fair to women. Mm. Preponderance of lower-paid workers are women.
That's not
public
it.
Sector mm. women.
Nope.
Employment Standards Act. Eliminating discrimination in the workforce. But women have lost protections. I'm shocked. There's nothing about mothering here.
Working is the most important job in this nation, and she leaves it out of her tirade? I know, it's a shock. We're just not used to hearing that kind of thing.
You know,
Am I screwing up the whole system here?
You are here. So that's Marjorie Griffin Cohen.
I know why she has a problem. There are not enough female truck drivers in BC.
Oh, maybe that's it.
Oh,
that's
Doris.
It. Well, no, according to the Vancouver Sun,
oh, wait.
Their lead editorial today, of all the issues in the world,
women truck drivers,
the gains that women have made in so many different places to celebrate, there's cause for concern in some areas as well. We'll get to that in a second. Their big editorial today, lack of women in science needs to be addressed. Why? Why? If women have every opportunity in the world to be scientists if they want to. Nobody is preventing any woman anywhere from taking science courses in high school, in university, post-grad. There is not a single shred of evidence anywhere that any woman is being discriminated against in applying for any scientific job. If there's a lack of women in science right now, it's because women are freely choosing not to go into science.
They forgot the pro-choice word. I choose not to.
Oh, yeah, that's pro-choice. You're pro-choice. Let them choose. No, that's not good enough. We have to be driven by statistics here. Common sense.
And
logic,
money. And money.
No, I'm saying common sense. Yes, well, money, sure. Yeah, well, statistics is me. You can get a heart for that.
Okay. Whose money? Okay. Whose money?
But
taxpayers'
common sense.
Money, yes.
Okay. Logic, morality. Just the rational thinking. None of this is part of the game here. What we have to do is blinded by that shining light on the hill that says 50%, 50%, 50% has to be that. And of course, if it overshoots the mark, if it's 60% like it is 70%
all the better
for undergraduates in the arts now, 70% women. Does that light start shining for men, 50%? Well, sort of a little dim little light powered by a AA battery, and that's about it.
Oh, there comes the international men's day.
I don't think there is one. Oh, Doris, I'm afraid.
I'm all for it.
The other 364 days of the year, International Men's Day, I think. I think that's the point here. That must be what they mean. If there's just one day for women, the other day must be for
that's
men.
That's the real problem, then.
I guess so. We need
50% of the year.
There you go. 50% of the days of the year should be days of the women.
There we go.
Okay.
We've solved it.
You're feeling better now, Tim?
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
Vancouver province, Canada lags behind world. Well, there's redundancy. If you're lagging, you're lagging behind. Canada lags behind world in promotions for women. Mentors appear lacking for future female business leaders. A survey, here's the big point. A survey of 290 organizations in Canada found that an overwhelming majority, 82%, had no clear strategy for encouraging women to enter leadership positions. So, what?
Whoopie ding!
Excuse me.
Yes,
I own a business.
Yes.
You can apply for the job.
Yes.
That's it.
That's it. Okay? No, there's no evidence of discrimination. Do we have to force women? We have to sort of encourage. If they don't want to go there, don't let them go there. You know, like, they don't have to. Don't force them to go there.
Well,
don't,
you know what?
But you know what all of this is saying? It's telling. All of these sorts of columns and all these sorts of news stories are saying, girls, young ladies, we're not going to consider you a success or fulfilled or a true woman unless you are in there doing the rat race just like the men are doing.
Yeah,
unless
but doesn't
you rant
that
and rave.
Yeah, doesn't that demonstrate the stupidity of these individuals, though, Terry? You know, I look at
there. You are jumping to conclusions.
Absolutely,
again.
Yeah, and I can. I'm a woman.
Yes, you can.
But you know, I tell all my daughters-in-laws and daughters now, you know, stay home with your babies. Forget work.
Yeah, well,
that's the most important job in the world,
sure.
And I'm so delighted that they all are staying home.
That's your free choice to say that, and their choice to
accept
the wise words of their mother or their mother-in-law or
thank
whatever.
You. And that's a given. The wise
right.
words.
Phyllis Schlafly once said, "Today a woman can be anything she wants to be, but not all at once." And Mrs. Schlafly chose first to be a mother when she had that wrapped up.
Sure.
She then became a lawyer. And she's now the head of a group called Concerned Women for America. She has carved her career wherever she wanted to, but she did allow biology to choose for her the time when she would be raising small children.
Well, you know what the sad commentary is on this little collection that you have, Terry?
We haven't got to them all. There were a couple of good pieces, though, and I'll get to those in a second.
But, you know, is that the downstream media actually plays into this?
Oh.
Like, what does that say? Are they putting too many women in positions where they're not making really good decisions because maybe they're not really qualified to be there? We need to start thinking about this.
I don't know. Is there evidence of affirmative action for females in the workplace? I don't know about that. But I certainly know there's no evidence of discrimination against women.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't want to say that, let's say, Elizabeth Payne, the member of the Ottawa Citizens Editorial Board, who gripes for 600 words about the fact that, now get this, she's upset that women who have higher paying jobs take a greater hit to their income when they leave the job to raise a family than do women with lower paying jobs. Well,
duh.
Like, that's not fair. Something has to be done. Well, if women are choosing, and by the way, this choosing to leave the workforce doesn't take place all with women. Some men do it too.
Mm-hmm.
I've done it myself in the last 3 years. I'm only working part-time. I'm doing a lot of other stuff in the nonprofit charity section. And
you took a hit.
And I took a hit. That was my free choice. And
nobody made you?
Nobody made me do that. No, nobody made me do that.
Do I need to blink a light?
Yeah, Elizabeth Payne is complaining about that, and that's just like, don't you have anything else to talk about? Thank goodness Margaret Wente of the Globe and Mail sort of said, hey, for women in the West, there's no need to gripe. The war has been won.
It goes
so far.
Hallelujah.
She doesn't deal, though, with the whole issue of motherhood. And she just talks about, listen, women have won all these rights. They have all these freedoms, and they've taken on new responsibilities as well. By far the best piece that was written, it was in today's National Post by Tasha Kiridin. And really she says that she takes a real sharp critique on the radical feminist point of view of women only being viewed as successful if they're successful in the workplace. Talking about how a lot of the statistics about women falling behind and the wage gap and stuff, it's all due to women freely choosing to work less than full time, things like that. So if you're going to read anything, read Tasha. That'll help ground you.
But you know what, Terry, you raised an interesting point with the Wentworth case. You know, have women really won? You know, because most women now complain about being so stressed out.
Uh-huh.
There's heart disease in women now that we've never seen statistics like before. Diabetes, health problems. What have women won?
Well, they haven't won big families. And one of the things that Tasha touches on, but is really the big issue here, is the demographic winter. Ron, you've talked about it,
yes.
the looming demographic winter with so many working women having no children or just one child, and the incredible crisis that this is going to bring upon our society in the next 20 and 30 years. A crisis that can be forestalled to some extent by the massive immigration that Canada is having. So people who are concerned, as our guest a couple of weeks ago was the talk show host from Ottawa,
Lowell Green,
about immigration, should also know that that immigration is like one way anyway of getting more people into society, into the economy, so we won't have things just crashing and burning with everything from Canada pension to unemployment insurance and health care costs too, because where there was 5 and 6 workers supporting old people, it's going to be like one.
But Terry, we have to recognize that the third world nations cannot continue to supply this deficit because they too have declining fertility rates. The demographic winter is a global problem, according to the United Nations, and they say by 2050 it could plunge us into a global depression worse than the 30s because fertility rates all over the world are declining.
So what hath women's
rights? Well, Doris and I did our part.
What women's rights rot? Yes, there's phenomenal rights, freedoms, contributions to society in so many ways. I mean, there's the women doing jobs like this, what you're doing now. I mean, it couldn't really have happened 100 years ago, and what you're doing as well.
Well, no, I don't agree with you, Terry.
Not
with the internet, but you know, there was this wonderful woman called Carrie Nation. You know, come on,
that's Carrie's Nation,
Carrie's Nation. But you know, I don't see Terry. I don't agree with that because I think women who want to do what they want to do have always done it. I mean, my aunts ran the mines in the Paw, Manitoba. You know, I think right now there is this huge drag out people, whether they want to or not, because everybody thinks this is what they're supposed to be doing. And if you were to take a room full of women and said, look, if motherhood and staying home was revered in our society, cherished, upheld,
as it should be,
would you take that? Would you make that decision?
The basic premise here that I kind of work from, and it's a line that Peggy Noonan, the great writer who is a speechwriter for Ronald Reagan, came up with when describing
and she was the housewife that stayed home and wrote speeches,
was that which you celebrate, you encourage. Mm-hmm. And right now, you see the pages of the newspaper filled with successful female business people. All week there's been features, advertorials in the local papers, full sections. We're celebrating successful women in the workforce. And by celebrating, we encourage. Why are we not celebrating all aspects of what females can do and do?
And want to do.
And that we should be. And that's really...
Can I toss something in there?
Please,
Doris. Okay, you guys had your time now, so
absolutely.
Be quiet for a minute.
That's right. Yeah.
See, these okay. guests on the show.
I want to separate now... International Women's Day, I completely ignore that thing because I'm a woman, so it's Women's Day for me all year round, so I don't need this. Thank you very much. Also, what's being written in our papers, I'm sorry, I'm not interested. That griping, I don't care. Now, we have in the world situations where it's pretty horrible for women, so I would suggest all these women that are writing these columns have too much time on their hands, so I would suggest you go there and help those women improve their situations and leave us over here alone.
Like Saudi Arabia?
Well, whatever. There are enough places to do that. But also,
can we send them to Libya?
Well, that's one too. But coming back to who women are, women are more than just a career. And that's what bothers me so much. We keep forgetting about those women who you have mothers at home. These are the ones that go to school and volunteer. These are those that drive your kids to all the sports events because you're too busy working on your career. Or they volunteer in the nonprofit section. They are those that maybe volunteer for the Cancer Society while you are busy running after your career, and that's the thing that really irks me.
Yeah, very, very well said, Doris. Thank you,
Terry.
Are we clear the air on this?
Well, can I offer you an opinion?
I'm just getting going, actually.
No, that's good. I know this is right up in your alley.
There's an opinion that I've been brewing on for some time about why the media, the downstream media, are so quick to leap on causes like this and causes like the gay agenda and so forth. And I have come up with a theory. I'll offer it to you because you're a journalist. You can tell me whether or not...
I was part of the downstream until I got swept away.
It.
Thank you.
And the theory is righteous.
See, as a woman, how much power I have. Right. I can sweep you away.
Right. The theory is righteousness envy. Like, if you were to go back into the 40s and 50s, I remember a journalist named John Howard Griffin underwent some serious treatments. They actually damaged his health. He's a white guy. He turned his skin black and traveled through the Deep South and wrote a book about it called Black Like Me. Yeah, and in those days, that kind of ignited the cause, the civil rights cause, among the media. Okay. And the media were very strong on civil rights for people of African ancestry during those decades, the 40s, the 50s, and into the 60s. Come on into the 70s, we've got a whole new crop of kids coming out of the J schools, journalism schools, and they would really love to have a cause like that. Right. But that one's been taken and done.
And we didn't have Watergate either.
And they're looking for
a deprived lot.
They're looking for another cause, another horse to ride. They envy the righteousness that their predecessors in journalism had when they were on a real cause. But so they pick up these pseudo causes, one of which is the radical feminist idea that a woman is meaningless unless she's doing something that men do, rather than doing the one thing that only women can do, which is to be mothers.
I was going to say, if they think motherhood isn't about science, then they need to to get down to together. Biological reproduction, chemistry in the kitchen, my goodness.
That's right.
Anyway, so they've adopted these flake causes, and in so doing, they have distorted our culture and our society.
But you know what? We're giving too much power away to these people. I mean, these are just words on pages. And this is where I see the younger generation who were left with daycares, who were just sort of abandoned while their mothers went out and tried to find careers. They're making choices very differently than their mothers did. Yeah. We're seeing resurgence of women who are wanting to be mothers, wanting to be nurturers, wanting to care for their children.
And one of the, it's hard to leave this issue, and I'm sorry for, I didn't realize we were going so
long. Yeah, look what you've done now.
One of the reasons that so many women will say that, well, I have to get out there and work, is that it costs so much now to have a home, and you know, you have to have a working father and a working mother. And my answer to that is that one of the big reasons, if you look at how prices have gone up and where your cost of living has gone up over the last, let's say, 50 years, you know, you see food this much and fuel this much, and then you see your taxes this much. And where's that tax money going? It's kind of this dog chasing its tail thing. The tax money is going to deal with social problems associated with children who aren't being parented well enough, or more daycare, you know, like there's an ever-expanding
mother government trying
mother
to be a bad mother,
which we'll be talking about in the second half of the show, which may be coming up sooner than we want. But we better move on.
Wait,
no, just let me.
There's always one.
Because Libya was mentioned, and I just got to share it with you.
No, Libya.
Dry Bones, one of my favorite cartoons, just six quick sentences, says Libya's being on the UN Human Rights Council made the UN look foolish. They won't make that mistake again. No, they won't. This time they're appointing Iran to their Women's Rights Committee.
That's right.
There you go.
Very good point. So we've been talking about gender and sex.
We do a lot of that on this show.
We do a lot of that. Yeah. But we'll just change tack a bit here and introduce the formal first part of our show, Carrie. And it's something that sort of set off alarm bells. You've been very busy, and Ron, you have this week as well. Can we start it with the press release that Ron's organization, Parents for Democracy and Education, issued 2 days ago?
Okay.
Let's start it there. And tell us what was in that press release, and then we can go to that'll open the gates. Is that a good way to start it, Carrie?
That works for me.
Okay, good.
Well, I discovered that the BC Teachers Federation is distributing a booklet written by a group called Pride Education Network, which I didn't know until Carrie told me this. It used to be GALE BC, which is Gay and Lesbian Education.
Right,
they've changed their names.
Which is a very small group of militant activist gay teachers within British Columbia.
The names have been changed to protect the guilty.
Gay. Some of them, I mean, they're all gay rights proponents. The fact of their sexuality is
unknown
incidental.
To us.
We don't really
know. No, they're gay
they're
and
gay.
Lesbian educators, but now we know that sexual orientation is fluid, so we shouldn't be too quick to
getting
just...
Getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
Okay,
the
so
the issue is that they promote the advancement of gay rights education
There is this 62-page book called Gender Spectrum. The Gender Spectrum. 62 pages of it. Well, I downloaded it and read through it, and it was such a load of codswallop. It's so absurd. And by the way, I sent a copy of it off to Dr. Leonard Sachs.
Okay, let's keep okay. with your your organization. And
Parents,
your organization is
Parents for Democracy and Education, which has been fighting the Koren Settlement Agreement for years now, and is a part of a consortium called Take Back Our Schools, which includes a number of other organizations, including Real Women BC. So Parents for Democracy and Education sent out a parents alert to warn parents that this booklet is being distributed to educators all over BC to teach them to teach that there are five or seven, a whole bunch of different genders, and that people move fluidly between them and then
and
also,
this is not the curriculum that must be taught. It's just sort of, it's a background education for teachers to try to work it into the curricula where they see it appropriate. Is that essentially
that's correct
what the BC
at
Tech,
this point?
At
and
this
also,
point, Doris,
at the
thank you.
Same time, we learned that the BC Teachers Federation, and let's remember, this is a union. This is not a professional body of experts. This is a union that tries to control what happens.
A very political union.
Very political union. So on April 15th, they are promoting a day of silence in the schools when teachers and students are encouraged to be absolutely silent for the whole day. You think of the multi-million dollar waste of time and resources that is going on there.
And this is silence to protest the fact that different gendered people
won't shut up.
No. I have no voice.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah, have no voice.
Sorry, I got that backwards. Didn't
Doris, were you aware of this? This day, I think it's been growing in the U.S. quite a bit, and it's just
in Canada.
Yeah, recently.
Yes.
Yeah.
I got the information too. So we're talking to add what Ron was saying. This isn't just one day that the BCTF is scheduling here. This is actually a sequence. A series of events.
Yeah.
So you will have then on May 17, you have the International Day Against Homophobia.
Which kicks off.
That's right. The Week Against Homophobia, which will run from May 17 to 21. But what comes along with that is all kinds of suggestions from the BCTF to the teachers on what they can do on the Day of Silence, plus International Day Against Homophobia and the entire week. They're different activities for each day that are being suggested. They start from posters to doing crafts with the younger children and all that sort of thing.
Is this such a big problem in schools? And tell me if I'm off base here, but I think the BCTF has seen what it sees as thinks is a problem in the general society and wants to kind of attack that problem, real or imagined, and the only way it has any power in the schools. And sort of using our school children as sort of agents of some sort to further their own agenda.
It's an idea that the Hitler Youth proposed. You know, if you capture one generation and change their thinking, you have changed the society. By the way,
if I ever invoke Hitler in any discussion I'm having with my children, I automatically lose the debate.
I know,
because it's too easy to go to that extreme.
But it Nevertheless, the BCTF's own code of ethics states explicitly the classroom is not to be used for indoctrination. That's exactly what they are trying to do here.
Okay.
And they have set up an entire department of the BCTF to help teachers bring these issues, non-issues, into the classroom and teach one dimension of it and not teach the whole truth about these issues.
So what did your press release, your press alert say that went out?
Well,
what response did it generate besides getting you on the show tonight here?
I'm wearing two
hats. What
tonight.
Length
That's
do you
right.
go to, Ron Gray?
Right.
All right. It warned parents that these events are coming up and then suggested what you really ought to do on the day of silence and on the day against homophobia and on the week against homophobia is keep your kids home. Don't send them to be subjected to this brainwashing.
Not maybe try to have other common sense or put a program together from a different point of view, or find teachers that might not be sympathetic to that propaganda and have their own events, or fight fire with fire.
Terry, Parents for Democracy and Education has been trying for years to get some balance into this issue. When we started off, we wanted to say the Koren Settlement Agreement should never have been signed. It was done behind closed doors by the then Minister of Education and the then Attorney General with these two men who were threatening a human rights case against the provincial government. It was never discussed in the legislature. It is really not a legal document.
Okay, well, let's not travel down that
but
road.
But when
right
we
now.
Tried when we tried that, we got rebuffed. So we went to the Minister of Education and said, would you then let us make a representation on behalf of parents? Can we try to bring their voice into this?
And I
the minister would not talk to us.
Right. Doris, what's Real Women's point of view or your personal point of view on a call to withdraw your children from school for the day or the week or whatever?
I think, first of all, we have to understand that we're right now in a sort of a political climate where to go to the school and very politely ask for the other side to be represented is just not going to work. We're way beyond that point. So really what it boils down to now, we believe, is that this is now up to the parents. And the only thing that ultimately matters is money and power. So if we start en masse, remove our children from the public school system, we're going to weaken the BCTF. That's the only way to really kick them really seriously on where it hurts.
So you're not talking about just removing them for the day in protest. You're talking about let's set up your own schools or go to independent schools.
Well,
or
it
Christian
starts
schools
with
or,
this one.
Okay.
It starts with this one. If we can get as many people as possible to keep their children home on April 15, that's the first step to just show, whoops, there are some people out there that are taking offense. Maybe we should pay attention. That's the first thing.
Well, but it's more than that, though, Doris, isn't it? It's not that parents are taking offense. It's this is going to be, you know, maybe the straw that breaks the camel's back. This is not anything new. The politicizing of the public education system or the hijacking of the public indoctrination system is what has gone on here. Parents who want to get an education for their children, at least the ones that I've talked to, know it's not available any longer because so much time is being spent on social engineering, mixing kids up with nonsense issues, not giving them the facts on issues. I mean, everything from global education to, you know, issues around sexual orientation. I mean, these aren't even fact-based arguments that they use. It's pseudo-psychology. It's brainwashing. And that's from the parents I've talked to. They're fed up. They said, okay, there's no hope for this system. Mm. Let's get the funding. Because each child, what is the funding for per pupil now in BC? 6,200?
Yeah, about that.
Why are parents being penalized when they seek an alternative way to truly educate children?
Well, in Real Women, we've always made proposals for a voucher system. That's the only way you can actually hold educators, etc., accountable, because that gives you an opportunity to say, you know what, I don't like what's going on here. This isn't working for my child. My child isn't learning. I'm going somewhere else. That's that we've always advocated vouchers.
And, that's open up to the schools then. If the schools are going to get such a great clientele from having kids dress up like transgendered individuals and celebrating days of silence, then hopefully everybody will want to put their child into that school. But for the school who wants to stick to the basics and academically,
isn't that being all about
education?
Pro-choice?
Yeah.
Or back to the choice.
Yeah. Well, and Terry, that's... What Doris is talking about, the voucher system, is really probably the most practical. I went over the top on this release, me personally, and said, look, if they're using the monopoly education system to indoctrinate your children, for heaven's sakes, protect your children. Get them out of there. Teach them yourself.
So without... I can see that a press release like this would be seen by the downstream media as being hateful or prejudiced. Was that the because that's sort of the way anybody that criticizes.
What's hate?
I know that. But I'm saying that from the downstream media, the people that are used to dealing with this from a progressive
They have to
point
go to
view,
their guidebook. Oh, anybody who speaks
point
out.
Of view,
yeah.
They use this made up term, homophobic, and things like that, when there's nobody fearing homosexuals. A phobia is like an unnatural fear. But this word that sounds like a psychiatric condition or something. I mean, it's a political issue.
It's just a made-up propaganda word.
You're dealing with a this is a political issue, and you want to debate it on political and medical and scientific and moral terms, things like that.
Civil terms.
But I would think that either A, the mainstream media would not give you the time of day, or if they would talk to you about this, excuse me, I should put a dollar into my penalty. I called it mainstream instead of downstream media. We should have a little thing
I'll
here.
I'll keep track.
That's right. So what was the response to this press release?
Well, let me say, first of all, when Parents for Democracy and Education sent out this release, the response was a stunning silence until one of the people I happened to send it to was Carrie Simpson, and she sent it out to the Roadkill Radio list. Apparently more people read... You know, there's more influential people.
I speak with authority, Ron Gray.
That's
you should know that by
We're
now.
We're the super highway to media exposure.
When Carrie and Terry speak, people listen.
That's right.
The downstream media start paddling backwards, hoping to catch up with us.
So Brett Manier from CKNW called me up, and he was trying to call me up, but he didn't know where to get a hold of me, so he called Bill Vanderzam, correctly guessing that Bill knew how to get in touch with me. But because, you know, Bill and Lillian Vanderzam have a letter on the Parents for Democracy and Education website supporting our cause.
Okay.
So he called.
So Bill's not your personal secretary, is that what you're telling us?
Okay. He screens calls for you.
Because I could use him.
He's my call screener.
Hi, Bill.
Anyway, so Bill gave him my phone number, and he got in touch with me. And so yesterday we did an interview, and then, you know, I remember Mark Twain did a routine about the local interviewer, in which he said, in the end, he said, you may go over the finished result with a divining rod and not find yourself in there.
Now, do we have a clip or anything?
I think we do.
Okay.
Len, have you got a clip of
set this up for us very quickly.
Okay,
what are we gonna hear?
Brett Manier did an interview with me. And
so this is on CKNW.
On CKNW.
It's the biggest news station, talk radio in British Columbia.
And he did, I don't know, about a 90-second news item on the 5 o'clock and again on the 5:30 news. And then a guy named John McComb has a show called The World Today. Starts somewhere on 4 o'clock in the afternoon, runs to 6 on the same station. And he does commentary and things. So he did a short interview with Brett Manier, the reporter, about what the reporter had said that I had said.
Okay.
And then he jumped off and did some of his own commentary on that.
Okay.
And that's where everything really hit the fan.
All right, so let's have a listen. So this is the interview and the resulting... tirade.
This is John McComb's interview with his reporter, Brett Manier, and then it's followed with...
Okay, can we roll that one?
5:36 on the World Today. A Fraser Valley group of social conservatives is launching a campaign to encourage parents to pull their kids from the public school system because they say the BC Teachers Federation is promoting a homosexual agenda. The Parents for Democracy in Education Society feels the BC government has refused to listen to parents about the education of their own children. CKNW reporter Brett Minear has been in contact with these folks and joins me in the studio now. I mean, that pretty well sums up their philosophy, I guess.
Yeah, they have some very slickly produced, DVDs and everything available for parents and church groups and other organizations. They say that they're not just a Christian group; that they, also have members who are Sikh and Muslim. But they basically are opposed to the BCTF and their campaigns teaching. Tolerance and whatnot in some of their anti-homophobia campaigns. We'll play a little piece of audio for you, but I should just warn our listeners that in this interview, I use a term that is will be offensive to some.
There is a serious danger that some will be tempted to experiment, and some who experiment will become addicted, and we will be sentencing those children to an early grave. The BCTF has created a whole department for the promotion of this agenda, and there's a number of things that they're currently doing that we wanted to alert parents to. One is a day of silence on April 15th, when teachers and students are encouraged to remain silent all day long in some sort of show of sympathy with homosexual people. Now, the ostensible reason for doing this is to diminish bullying, and I'm in favor of programs to restrain bullies. But the way to do that is to influence the behavior of the children to say bullying is wrong. That's the message. Not that the behavior of any group of people that has been bullied is necessarily right.
They would argue that what they're trying to encourage in kids is tolerance, right? Like when you have children calling each other, faggot, that is a bullying situation. And
yeah, and I agree with them. Teaching the children that doing that is not okay. But for a university professor to be calling Christians the enemy, that's hardly tolerance. Their version of diversity simply doesn't include me. Or my kids, or my grandkids. And
they could argue that your version of diversity doesn't include them.
Well, and they're free to argue that. I have never called them, whoever they are, names, or I've never advocated violence against them. I've never advocated restricting their civil rights. But they do actively restrict the civil rights of people who disagree with them.
That is Ron Gray. He's the vice president of Parents for Democracy in Education. And regarding Bill Vanderzam's support for this group, I should tell you that their websites and whatnot for financial contributions list P.O. boxes and whatnot. There's no phone numbers listed. So it took a while to actually find out who would be a talker on this story. And I even, searched domain names and tried to track down address, phone numbers that way. They came back to P.O. boxes in Point Roberts and whatnot. Yeah. But and Ron told me that there's nothing sinister there. It has to do with a passing of the torch between guys on their board and whatnot. But but in the end, I came up with nothing that way. In the end, how I found Ron and was able to speak with Ron was Bill Vanderzam returned my email and he hooked me up with Ron Gray's cell phone number.
Okay, and there's a letter on the website from both Bill and Lillian Vanderzam. Essentially supporting the position of this group and Parents for Democracy in Education.
Correct.
One of the lines is we all need to get involved before it's too late.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, this all goes back to the fight over that high school elective course, Social Justice 12. This is one of the groups that was helping organize opposition to that course out in Abbotsford High Schools, some years ago. So they've been around for a while, and they're trying to get back at her again.
Brett Meneer in from the newsroom. They say the BC Teachers Federation is promoting a homosexual agenda by talking about bullying, and as Brett mentioned, courses like Social Justice 12, and they want parents to pull their kids from the public school system because of it. We all need to get involved before it's too late, according to a letter from the Vanderzams. And the idea that somebody would wake up one day and say, hey, you know what, I think I'm going to be homosexual, and deal with what a lot of gay people have had to deal with over the years, is a completely, to me, ridiculous statement.
You know, the first thing that comes to my mind is how stupid these people are in the downstream media and their ignorance about what's really going on in the classrooms of British Columbia. This is not about grade 12 social justice people. These lesson plans go right down to kindergarten. Well, actually, preschool, I know that there's curricula being developed for that as well and already implemented. It just, you know, this is what, where is the public debate when you're dealing with such narrow-minded thinking? Or I don't even want to use the word thinking with what I just heard. I mean, you know, that this is not about tolerance. This is not about tolerance.
No, and well, Doris, I wanted to ask you about that, because the CKNW host sort of narrowed this down to simply, it sounded like Ron and his group are opposed to anti-bullying campaigns and tolerance campaigns. But what the BCTF is proposing, it goes much farther than that, and there's you've looked at
well. Some the one thing, the one thing for starters is, you know, they're talking about fighting bullying. Now, this is so silly. It would be funny if it wasn't so sad, because this is the biggest bullying tactic that anyone can think of. If you want to fight bullying, what we need to teach our children is, no matter if you agree or disagree with what someone says or someone does, there is a certain conduct of behavior that you have to adhere to. That is what tolerance is about. Tolerance is not saying that you have to think the way I think or else, which is what this is. This isn't about bullying. This is about taking a particular topic that is spread into the school on any level, any school, and this is bringing in information that, one, is incorrect, it's not medically, scientifically correct, and it's going to harm our children. That's the bottom line.
Now, we were wondering when we first heard John McComb's editorial earlier this evening before the show started, when he was talking about essentially accusing you of saying that people wake up one day and decide to be homosexuals. I think he was probably referring to the initial part of your interview that they aired, when you said something about that this sort of education may encourage homosexual experimentation.
Yeah, well,
did you say that? And
I did say that.
And there's a couple of points there. Yeah, give me some background on that.
Because
how does that happen?
Well,
if they say all they're doing is just educating people about the diversity of human sexual behavior, how does that end up encouraging somebody to try? And then you say somebody might become addicted to that as well.
Yeah.
Those are words that would get a John McCombs of the world their attention, without a doubt.
If they would ask, as you just did, what's the background for those statements, there are good, objective, scientific, factual answers. And some of that came out in the conversation I had with Brett Meneer. For example, I talked about homosexual behavior shortening life expectancy. Now, I told Brett that refers to a study that was done in Vancouver in the year 2000, and it was published in the Journal of the Canadian Medical Association, and it was published in the International Journal of Epidemiology, and it said that the life expectancy of a homosexual man in Canada in the year 2000 is approximately equal to that of all men in Canada in the year 1871. That is about 20 years less than the life expectancy of all Canadian men.
And for whatever reason, correlation or causation, the health outcomes for homosexuals are worse than they are for heterosexuals.
Well, as even EGAIL, Equality for Gays and Lesbians Elsewhere.
Well, you know, and I wrote about this in the National Post in May 4th, 2009, because a group of homosexual, gay, lesbian, and bisexual individuals filed a human rights complaint with the Canadian Human Rights Commission, saying we need special programs
and more money.
And more money because we have special health problems, and we're being ignored because of that, and because we aren't getting this stuff, and that constitutes a human rights abuse, a discrimination. So, in essence, they've
self-acknowledged.
They acknowledge what you're saying here. Now, this is not an issue that I've studied at all. I'm just saying from their own words.
Well,
they're saying that they have special health needs that need extra money. So, that's worth getting on the public record.
And what neither right John McComb nor Brett Menear did, which you, as a journalist, just began to do, was to ask, where do these statements come from? Are they just your opinions, or is there some backing for it? For example, I referred to addiction. Dr. Jeffrey Satinover, who taught psychiatry at Yale University, who is the past president of the C.J. Jung Psychological Association, wrote in his book that homosexuality is a behavioral addiction whose nearest analog is alcoholism. The more you do it, the more addicted you become. He calls it an addiction.
Well, that certainly goes against the whole the tide of society in the last 20 years, where increasingly not only is it seen as something you are born with, but it's like genetically embedded almost.
But it is not.
People are born with homosexual inclinations and live their lives as they identify as homosexuals. This is where they find their happiness. This is where. So, are there different types of homosexuals? Are some people actually born that way?
No. Nobody is born that way, and there are solid scientific studies to demonstrate that. Back in 1993, a guy named Dr. Dean Hamer, who was with the National Institutes of Health down in Florida, was on the front cover of Time and Newsweek and Maclean's magazine, trumpeting that he had discovered the gay gene.
Right.
Well, his report was repudiated by peer review and attempts to replicate his studies. And in fact, there is no gay gene. And in fact, his own study materials, which were often done with twins, the materials related to identical twins, identical twins who have exactly the same DNA, where one twin is homosexual. If one twin is homosexual, there's a 40% chance on average that the other one would be. If it were genetically caused, it would be 100%.
Right.
They're just talking feelings. They want to feel good about this cause that they have taken.
I think we need to absolutely make a point that whatever is being said here right now is easily researchable.
Mm-hmm.
It's in scientific studies. It's in medical journals. We're not sitting here just discussing something
You know what's interesting though is why can't this kind of discussion take place in the downstream media? Why can't there be an openness to the facts? Let's look at the science. Let's look at those realistic studies. Let's look at and I'm reading. This is something I pulled off of a link from the BC Teachers Federation, where their own document acknowledges that there's a higher prevalence of low self-esteem, emotional distress, and physical and sexual abuse was higher among homosexual and bisexual students. You know, there's other factors that should be. But you know what, Terry?
They would say that that's caused by people who don't accept them.
No, there are studies, sociological studies, Terry, that show that that is not true. But for example, in the Netherlands and in Belgium, where homosexuality and same-sex marriage have been in place for, what, 15, almost 20 years now, the same higher-than-normal levels of psychological disorder are present among homosexuals.
Is it possible that despite, okay, well-informed people have all these facts and of all the different points of view, is it possible that something that the John McCombs of the world and the BCTF is afraid of is that a campaign such as your group is launching will bring people out of the woodwork who just are knee-jerk anti-gay people, who just don't like, you know, would be the guys that go downtown and beat gays up or something like that. That happens, right? There is a, and there, that this sort of thing encourages the anti-social behavior that some people do manifest toward gay people, and that's what they're afraid of, and they want to be careful, and they don't want to do anything at all because that is a problem. I mean, there shouldn't be people, you know, we shouldn't be beating people up because of their sexual orientation or their sexual practices.
Granted, but you don't solve that problem by ignoring the facts. Let me tell you a short story that relates to just that cause. When I was living in Quebec, in Hull, Quebec, a guy whom I'm sure you've heard of, Fred Phelps from Topeka, Kansas, of the Westboro Baptist Church, came up to Canada, came to Ottawa to burn a Canadian flag in front of the Supreme Court because they had made a favorable decision in a lesbian case that was before them. And Phelps and his gang, who are mostly his own family, were marching around with signs that say, "God hates fags."
Right.
Okay. An Ottawa newspaper, not the Citizen, it was one of the smaller ones, but an Ottawa newspaper called me at home and said, "Are you going to go and join Reverend Phelps?" And I said, "No." And they said, "Why not?" I said, "Because he tells lies about my Lord. God doesn't hate homosexuals. He hates what they do because it's destroying someone he made in love." Yeah. That's my perspective.
Okay. But Ron, just as we're talking on this subject and going right back to what Terry said, because I think it's a very important question, and as a person who's spoke across this nation to thousands of people, you know, I can say Canadians are the most kind, embracing individuals. That this issue isn't about that. This issue is about the indoctrination of children with misinformation, bad information,
yes,
and dangerous information. In addition, what I see what your group's doing is one of the most peaceful remedies available. Heck, let them teach what they want. Give us vouchers and we'll just go somewhere where there's acceptable forms of education for our children, right? It's where they teach the facts about the issues related to a homophilic type of person.
Doris, how much of this position is actually a moral position on behalf of Real Women or the Parents for Democracy and Education? What, in terms of, there's a feeling that homosexual behavior is immoral, is wrong. Does that come into the picture from your point of view at all?
You know, the first thing we say is that, one, these are our children. And I think the BCTF has forgotten that. They think they're theirs.
Yeah.
Excuse me, they're ours. And the parents are
Actually, they share them with you. Yeah.
Well, if I'm lucky, I'll get to have them every once in a while.
I have Alice McQuaid, a former president of the BC Teachers Federation, and Murray Corin and James Chamberlain saying that they have an equal say in the education of your children.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. That's their position.
Okay. Now, consider yourself corrected.
I am standing corrected here.
Okay.
Sitting.
I think they're
here.
Wrong, though. I think you're right.
But we are the primary educators of our children. I want to throw in something else. Nobody will ever love my child the way I love my child. I don't care how many university degrees anyone has, I'm sorry, they will never love my child the way I love my child. So
a teacher will lay down his or her life for your child in a situation the way a parent would.
Right.
So having said this, I'm the one who truly has the best in mind for this particular child. I don't have a particular agenda I'm working with. I want the best for my child. So when I see things happening in the school system that I think, you know what, this is not the best for my child. This is some agenda some grown-up people are pushing, and they use the public school system for their own personal agenda, I get seriously upset. So I would, coming back to these things, I would highly recommend, if you can, take your children out April 15. But you have to sit down with your children, and you have to talk to your children about what is actually happening in the school. As a matter of fact, as a parent, I highly urge you to be on top of things on an ongoing basis. Mm-hmm. You have to know what goes on in the schools. Please, these are your children. This is your responsibility. We have a lot of good teachers. Please, I don't want to take away from them. There are a lot of really good teachers. Yes, but I also have to say,
you don't have
the
to say
BCTF, you know, the good teachers are unfortunately not the ones that really have much of a say, because the BCTF will just clamp down on them as soon as they poke their nose up.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, you don't have to say the good teachers. The good teachers are cheering you guys on. That's what's happening. Well,
so just very quickly here.
Yes.
I want the parents to know, like, for example, the week of anti-homophobia thing here. One suggestion, read a story or newspaper article with lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, queer characters. Theme like the Sissy Duckling for elementary.
This or is their recommendations for teachers to do in the classroom.
Or Rainbow High for secondary. All right? Or take some time during a lesson to brainstorm responses to and strategies against homophobic name-calling and that's so gay. Or become an ally, challenge yourself and your colleagues to be more informed. And I would like to tell the BCTF to take their own advice, please. Thank you very much. And be a little more informed and get some of that information that we've been talked about.
By the way, the question of who has the primary responsibility, I like Doris's answer best of all, but there is in fact a legal framework of this, and that is that Canada is a signatory to the 1948 United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Article 26, Section 3 of that declaration says, parents have the prior right to choose how their children will be educated. Canada, having signed on to that, that should have legal force in Canada.
And I want to ask you the same question that I asked Doris about would you be taking this position, would you be so scrupulous as to the science, as to the social impact, if you didn't have a moral position on this as well and think that homosexual behavior is immoral? He's talked about God hating the action, not the person. So God hates the action because God believes that that's a bad action, i.e. immoral. Now, is that where it all starts with you, and does it flow from that?
Actually, Terry, no. Let me tell you something. When I became a Christian, which is 33 years ago now, one of the first things I learned was that the Bible doesn't tell me how you should live your life. It tells me how I should live my life if I choose to believe it. No, but there is nevertheless a moral dimension to this, in that if we are in our society encouraging practices that are harmful to the people who practice them,
in this case children,
it is immoral to encourage people to do things that harm themselves. That's a moral issue, quite apart from the Bible. That's a moral issue. And yes, I'm exercised about that moral issue. Look, it is, I mentioned before.
So it's not you and Doris and Ron attempting to impose your morality on anybody. It's you essentially saying, please respect my morality from your point of view, Ron.
And please don't impose your morality immorality on my children and my grandchildren.
Right. So it's just a proper respect of the differences.
Yeah.
It's true diversity. You true diversity, you might say, and rather than sort of a monolithic, let's all do this and
comply.
Yeah. So that's what you're both calling for, is real diversity, real freedom, real choice.
Real tolerance.
Real tolerance.
And real tolerance is actually when we can sit here and in a reasonable manner discuss issues like this without being called names, which usually we're the ones that get the name calling, as a matter of fact.
Yes, you get called more names,
but
No.
Isn't this a big issue of a democratic society? To have the maturity to sit down and debate issues? If we don't have this anymore, we have nothing.
Very good point.
We've been talking about this for almost an hour. And will you notice that none of us has called anyone any names?
Oh, Ron, you're so you.
The closest we have come.
Wait a minute, is that on the list?
Is to chastise them for the fact that they aren't bringing the facts into the discussion.
Mm-hmm. Well, you don't need to resort to ad hominem attacks when we're talking about issues, and we try not to do that any time on this show.
We're pretty good.
We're pretty good, I think. I mean, it's... It'd be easy to get angry and call
again,
people names.
I really want to reemphasize, and I have four children. I just want to state this right here. And what I've been always trying to teach my kids is, if I ever catch you bully someone, you got to deal with mama. I mean, you're going to be in such big trouble. You don't know what hit you, right? And no matter, you might disagree with someone. You might disagree what they think about certain things, what they do. You have absolutely no right to, in any way, in an inappropriate manner, respond to that. And this is what I emphasize. If we really want to eradicate bullying in the school grounds, that's what we need to teach our children.
But Doris, and we're running out of time, but we all know here at Roadkill Radio that's the Trojan horse that this agenda has been flown in under. I mean, when you look at
the materials,
you look at the misinformation, when you look at the all-outright bad information here, there's something else afoot here. And it's certainly not in the interest of children, nor is it in the interest of public education. And, you know, this is
where... Is there anything left of the public education?
No. No, I think that there's enough educational alternatives now that any competent, concerned, and well-intentioned parent should be looking outside the public education system.
Two quick points just to
okay, but
to
we're
wrap,
out of t-
just
she
to wrap this.
Has to be our co-host.
At the beginning of this discussion, I talked about the booklet, Gender Spectrum. That's what triggered the whole release. I sent a copy of it to Dr. Leonard Sachs. His letter, well, I won't read the whole letter. Just, he says, this issue is highly politically polarized. Parents who recognize the silliness of this brochure don't need pages of scholarly argument. They already know the brochure is silly.
Yeah.
All right. Now, Dr. Sachs is an internationally recognized authority on the impact of gender in education. The other thing I'd like to say is we talked about the BCTF and its agenda to manipulate student attitudes. Last year, we offered to send people a copy of the handout that the BCTF gave 2 years ago at their teacher training conference. I'd like to make that offer again. If you will just send an email with a request saying staircase brochure.
What's your email address at Parents for Education?
Send it to me, Ron Gray, R-O-N-G-R-A-Y, at telus.net. And I'll send you this thing so you can see for yourself what the BC Teachers Federation is trying to do in manipulating your children's attitudes.
Thank you, Ron Gray, Parents for Democracy and Education. And thanks, Doris Darvishy, Real Women of BC, Real Women of Canada, for a tremendous hour of very insightful, important, factual information.
Well, we'll do this again.
Yeah, we certainly will.
Yeah.
Listen, Carrie, why don't you introduce the next guests while I go and get them in here?
All right, and sounds like a plan.
And we'll vacate
night,
these
guys.
Chairs.
Thanks, nice to see you, Doris.
Good night.
Good night, Ron. All right. Well, that's one subject matter, I think, folks, that we could just go on and on about. And I see that we've got quite a few emails here. We are not going to have time to deal with them. But next week's show, we will pick this up again. This issue is definitely not going away. It hasn't gone away for all these years. But I think it's getting to a new level now where parents really are going to be hauling their kids. Well, we've seen an exodus out of the public education system anyway.